Well, good evening and welcome everybody to the June 4th, 2018 meeting of your city council. We are glad that you're all here. I'd like to invite you to rise with a salute of our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. We'll now have a roll call by our city clerk.
Councilmember Czar.
Here.
Councilmember Greg Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Taylor.
Here.
Councilmember Watson.
Here.
Councilmember Hansen. Pete Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Kennedy.
Here.
And everybody is here. We're going to shift now to public comment. And this is the time where you can speak to your city council on anything that's on your mind that's not on the agenda. If you don't have an agenda, it's up here, and you can grab one and follow what's going on here. We'll give you 3 minutes. Come up, introduce yourself, tell us where you live, and you got it. Welcome, Colleen.
Hi, I'm Colleen Harper. I'm on the Arts Commission. I just wanted to start out by saying thank you to everybody on the council who chose to allocate funds to us this year. We've done some really exciting projects, like the swing dance that we had in April. At the end of next week, we're going to be hanging a banner at Griffintown Park, congratulating the graduates of Ferndale High School, along with a temporary art installation designed by Guyan Cool, a graduating senior. There'll be pinwheels for each of the graduating seniors at Ferndale High School. Additionally, we are sponsoring the Youth Summer Theater again this year, and we're going to be painting a mural and having a chalk art festival at the end of the summer. We just want to keep making small, meaningful investments in our community. So, thank you.
Thank you. And I use the same brand of Palm Pilot. They work well, don't they?
It is. Old school.
Thank you, Colleen. Very good. Who else would like to talk to your city council? Very good. We'll close the public comment. Going on now to what's called the consent agenda. City Council?
Move to approve.
Second.
Who heard the voice? Kathy Watson. Moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Greg Hansen to approve the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, and the consent agenda has been adopted. Going on to the introduction of a new police officer, number 20. I guess you're going to want to do that, aren't you?
Sure.
Chief Turner, welcome. We're glad you're here.
It's not me. I'm not the new guy. If I could have Brian Llewellyn and your family come on up for a minute. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing our new hire, Officer Brian Llewellyn, Mayor and Council, Chief Turner with the Police Department. Officer Brian Llewellyn was born and raised in Longview, Washington. Following high school, Brian moved to Bellingham to attend Western Washington University, where he successfully graduated with a bachelor's degree in business administration. Brian worked in the banking industry for several years and met his wife, Erica, in 2010. The following year, he moved to Ferndale City. Brian decided his calling was in law enforcement, and in June 2012, he was hired from the Skagit County by the Skagit County Sheriff's Office, where we stole him from. Skagit County sent Brian to Academy, where he graduated top in his class in October 2012. Brian has served on patrol as a firearms instructor, SWAT team member, and active threat instructor so far in his career. We're very excited that Brian decided to join our team. Brian and Erica have two wonderful children, Bexley, age five,
or
two, Bowen and four. They currently live in Ferndale and are looking forward to raising their children here. I'd like you to welcome Officer Brian Llewellyn and his family. Thank you.
And it won't surprise anybody that Brian and Erica are members of one of the local health clubs. You'll see them there 4 or 5 times a day. So, very good. Very good. Thank you so much. We have next on our agenda, Director of the Domestic Violence Commission. Glad to have her again, Susan Marks. Good to see you.
All right. Get this a little more at my level. All right, so John reminded me multiple times before today that I have plenty of time, so I don't have to talk too fast. But that's something I usually forget once I start talking, so feel free to remind me as I'm talking if you need me to slow down. I'm Susan Marks. I'm the director of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission Against Domestic Violence. Several of you have heard me speak as I do this annually, and some of you this might be newer information. So a little bit about our commission. We were formed in 1998, so we've been around 20 years by the city of Bellingham and Whatcom County together. And in 2006, we reached out to all the other municipalities in Whatcom County to ask for their support so that we can really just be throughout kind of formality and form and function, working in all the jurisdictions throughout the county. And I really see this commission, we are a government creation. We are a government commission, a government body, as a demonstration to the community that our local leaders and government see this as an issue to be worked at a systemic level. It's not, it's a community issue that we're all responsible for solving. You have some information in your packets that has a little more about our role, but I'm going to talk to you specifically about a few things that we're doing in Ferndale. And as I mentioned, everything we do is at the systemic policy level. We're kind of at that 30,000 foot level, looking at how can we build the response and prevention to domestic violence that people who do the direct service are doing. So people such as our law enforcement, like how can we support that work? You also have in your packets a copy of our roster, which is, so we have 28 commission members, some of whom are appointed by the county, some by the city, and then some are selected from a pool of potential representatives. And so we have three representatives who are from this community. We have Mayor John Mutchler, one of our commission members, Chief Turner, and Linda Quinn, the superintendent of the Ferndale Schools. And Chief Turner was recruited, I think, at one of these very meetings about 2 years ago to fill a vacant position we had in police chief. So these are really useful presentations for me. Other people on the commission are other police chiefs, sheriff, our county prosecutor, public defender, court administrators, our city attorney, the mayor of Bellingham. No, I'm sorry, not the mayor of Bellingham, the mayor of Ferndale. We also have our county public health director, some DSHS administrators from the community service office and from the child protective services, and a lot of leaders from nonprofits, healthcare, mental health care, major employers, more community positions, faith leaders, et cetera. And I should say, we have three positions that are open to kind of serve the positions representing the small cities. And Ferndale, I think, since 2010 when I started, has filled all of those positions. And we've always opened them up to everyone. And Ferndale's just always been interested in jumping in, which is something we really appreciate. Our funding, we're primarily funded for our general operating support by local governments. The city of Ferndale does provide a contribution, which I appreciate. And then we also have two grants from the Department of Justice. And I always like people to understand that I think these grants, they're really large multi-year grants available to communities that are working at systems level and can make systems change. Not only do direct services make the change that's needed for direct services to be available and effective. So, again, that local funding makes it possible that we can get these kind of multi-year large grants. And the larger grants, these grants that we get do not go only to the commission. We usually, there's usually some project management for us. And then currently through our grants, we're also funding Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Services, Northwest Youth Services, Bridget Collins, Family Support Center, and Lummi Victims of Crime each gets funding out of those grants too. So we're able to support our local service providers. I want to talk about some of the work we're doing that's especially relevant to Ferndale. And for each of these, I want to start with some quotes of survivors to really center what we're talking about and why this is important. And I realize my slides do not have the same quotes that I have up there, which is kind of funny. I'm not sure how that happened. So I'll try to read from here. So in the past, he has slammed my fingers in a door, has pushed me, making me fall over furniture, has thrown me across the room. His behavior is escalating. I'm very afraid that he will go off the deep end and really hurt me or kill me and the kids. Since Wednesday, he's been texting me and emailing me continually with highly inappropriate sexual contact. Another quote from a survivor, all of a sudden the door opened. I tried to run. He smacked me. I fell down, got up, and told him to leave. He demanded sex and pushed me on the ground. I was crying and told him no. He spit on me, said I wasn't worth it, and walked out. And the third quote from another survivor, in July, he strangled me, broke my glasses, and beat my shins, causing me to limp for several days. At the end of August, he hit me in the face for the first time, leaving marks. In September, he pulled me by the hair and threw me around so hard, jerking me so badly by the neck that I went to the doctor and received x-rays. He destroyed three cell phones, my car stereo console, and my digital camera. So several years ago, we tend to do this every few years, we'll do some focus groups and interviews with survivors, and this is part of what we heard. At the same time, we also did a review of cases of domestic violence fatalities in our county, and kind of bringing these two things together, we decided with our resources to really focus on high-risk and high-lethality domestic violence. So one of the programs that we've implemented is the Lethality Assessment Program, which is a program that's implemented by local law enforcement. on the scene of domestic violence calls for service. And in your packets, you have this screen. It's 11 questions that law enforcement asks on the scene of a domestic violence call for service following a protocol. And a victim screen-in, pretty simple scoring based on some national research and best practices. Law enforcement will connect a victim, if the victim agrees, on site to a domestic violence advocate to do some immediate social safety planning and support, and really try to get that person connected ongoing for safety planning and support. And a lot of research shows that for victims to be engaged in advocacy, it really is life-saving. It greatly reduces their risk of serious assault or homicide, so that's really key to getting those victims connected. And it's been implemented in all of our Whatcom County law enforcement agencies starting in 2013 and 2014. And Ferndale was actually our first law enforcement officer to fully implement the program. And I consider this a success, because I would say within the last year it's gotten to the point where we used to do a lot of monitoring of data, and we still kind of keep data. We used to have to give a lot of feedback to agencies as it was being kind of rolled out, and at this point it really does not, we're just collecting data. The agencies are really running it by themselves, which is a huge success with any new program. Another project that we implemented was the Domestic Violence High Risk Team, and so the Lethality Assessment Program is victim-focused. This is offender-focused. So the purpose of this team is to identify who are offenders who we think are most at risk in this county of really harming their victims with serious assault or homicide. And reviewing who we think the most highest risk offenders are, sharing information about those offenders. We often found people who have, they might have misdemeanor cases in multiple jurisdictions, but by coming together and talking about those, we find ways to leverage orders for protection and no contact orders, bail, and sanctions across jurisdictions, or sometimes kind of bring things together at the county level to increase sanctions. So it's a way to really ensure that we're holding people accountable for very serious crimes. And currently we have, 41 people who are being monitored by the high-risk team, and three of those either have a case in Ferndale or live in Ferndale. So sometimes people might have another reason for having a case here. If, for example, they work here, just, you know, we're here when something happens. So three of those people have a connection to the Ferndale community. Another project we're doing that's very relevant for Ferndale is our Safe Futures project, which is working in schools. And this one, I'm going to start with some quotes that we gather as part of the needs assessment we did last year with school staff. The top two are school staff, and the last one is input we got from a youth. This project has a focus on youth who identify as LGBTQ in addition to all youth, because some research shows that those youth can often be more at high risk for experiencing abuse and also for not coming out about the abuse, and that quote kind of speaks to that. So the quotes are, a freshman reported they were sexually assaulted at school by another student. He was older and law enforcement got involved and they didn't have enough evidence to do anything. She and the offender still go to school together and see each other all the time. She's still struggling. Another staff person said, we're still lacking some resources to address in-depth and complex aspects. Sometimes we label or attempted to intervene in the way adults do with teenagers and just tell them, look, this is a bad relationship and I know you better and you should stop seeing them, even though we know that approach doesn't work. And then the youth from our focus group said, one barrier for queer youth is blatant queer phobia. People don't want to talk to them, or people don't want to listen to them or associate with them. So not as hard for a victim to come forward, but a victim is afraid of being harassed or made to feel unsafe or outed because they are queer. And then another piece of data we have that shows part of why we really wanted to do this work is a staff survey we did last year with Ferndale School District. And 23% of staff, and it was all staff through all levels, said that they had witnessed an act of abuse during the school day. So again, staff are seeing abuse happen, not only the effects of it happening in school for things that happened outside of school, but they actually are seeing abuse happen in the schools. So this project we've had for, we've been working with Ferndale actually since 2012 on this work. Some of you have heard me probably talk about, or Linda Quinn talk about, that this was initially a national pilot project through the Department of Justice. They funded 9 sites in the country to do work with middle and high schools on dating violence and sexual assault, and DV Commission Ferndale School District partnered, applied for that grant. We were one of those 9 sites. So we were initially part of the pilot. Out of that pilot, we decided that we wanted to expand it to elementary schools. That seemed like a big gap, and wanted to work with other districts. And so out of those 9, we were the only site that got to do expansion work. So we feel like we must have had some success in those first 3 years that we could demonstrate to be able to do that. So we're now working in Ferndale, Blaine, and Mount Baker Elementary through high school. And we've brought in additional partners. So in the first grant, we're working primarily with DVSAS, and now we're working with Lummi Victims of Crime, Northwest Youth Services, and Bridget Collins. So to get more, hopefully, service and support for students at schools. And yeah, basically we're trying to provide schools and school districts the ability to intervene sooner, do prevention and response work, and It's not that schools we think aren't doing a good job. It's that it's just such a great catch-all for our students and families. And so the rest of our agencies really want to be partnering there. So some of the things we've been able to do, multiple people here have attended the Ferndale Community Coalition meetings. We had a grant at the same time as the health department that we were working with the Ferndale schools. And so together with the district and the health department, we formed this Ferndale Community Coalition, which now is really kind of self-sustaining, has a leadership team, which we're a part of. This year, we sent a representative from Vista Middle School to attend a Healthy Masculinity Institute in Washington, D.C. So he's going to be a leader in his school with staff and students about healthy masculinity, healthy ways of being in a relationship for young men. We've developed procedures and MOUs to ensure that the on-site support is available currently with current school administrators and counselors, but also in an ongoing way that those agencies will be able to get support into the schools for students. And those therapy services are available, again, like K-12, so that's really exciting to be in elementary school. And we had done some response protocols with middle and high school, and we, after having them in place for a couple years, are updating those and expanding those to elementary schools with some additional information that needs to be added about how to identify students who are experiencing domestic violence at home and how to reach out to them, which is different, obviously, than reaching out to middle and high school students. So I think I was slower than usual.
Very good.
I still am looking at the time like, 20-minute presentation, 13 minutes. That's a little fast.
Questions from the city council. Susan Marks.
Thank you.
I know we all share in the goal that Ferndale will have zero tolerance
yeah.
to sexual assault and domestic mm-hmm. violence. That would be a place of redemption for mm-hmm. both victims and perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you are just part of of our solution here. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Great.
And we're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Come back more often.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening
very
to me.
Much.
Yeah. I'm sorry that there.
Moving on to item E, plant unit development and overview of a process that's rather important for Ferndale. And I'm going to bet that's Mr. Burnett, perhaps?
Nope.
No, okay. Associate Planner Haley Miller, good to have you.
Hi, thanks.
This is a video presentation?
It's a PowerPoint.
PowerPoint, that's
yep.
good. You do well.
Thanks.
But you have to do it.
You have to
Susan
open
Marks.
It, too.
Slides.
Right. Your team's falling down on the job.
27. Oh, man.
No pressure.
Something wrong with your staff, Haley.
Current development.
Right.
6-4.
Good job. That's not it. I'm just kidding.
Victory.
Good evening, City Council and Mr. Mayor. Haley Miller, Associate Planner. So today, in lieu of our private development update, staff is bringing forward to you an overview on the plan unit development process. You will be receiving a couple plan unit development applications in the future, and City Council is required to make the final decision. So we're going to give you an idea of what a PUD is and then cover the process. I'll show you a couple examples of PUDs around Ferndale and then explain to you what your role is in this process. So first, what is a PUD? It is a type of development and regulatory process. It does allow for greater flexibility with development and can, in theory, replace the underlying zoning for these developments. So this is just an example of a PUD concept that I have up on the screen. So in yellow, I'm showing some of the purposes of a PUD, followed by examples. So in this example, it's a large site located in the Old Pioneer Plaza development area, and the proposal consolidates the development into different types. So the yellow buildings there shown on the screen are residential, and then the development is clustered, so it does not impact the critical areas. There's a variety in the development. It's innovative. In this specific example, there's a corporate headquarters proposed, and then residential units. So in theory, somebody could live and work in this environment. There's also options for recreation throughout the development, a trail, and then some green spaces. So the two types of PUDs allowed in Ferndale currently are residential and commercial. And this is just an example of a traditional residential subdivision versus a residential plan unit development. So on the left-hand part of the screen, and they're both the same size, they're both 40-acre parcels. On the left-hand side, the traditional subdivision basically cuts out 8 symmetric parcels, doesn't really take into consideration the unique features of the site. And on the right-hand side, there's a planned unit development with lots that are irregular in shape and smaller, but there's actually 10 parcels there, and the parcels are clustered, allowing for more dense development in one area in trade for extra recreational opportunities. And then this configuration also allows for avoidance of the critical areas. So a little bit smaller lots, but more density in turn. And then also the city allows more flexible requirements and with conditions such as the road width. So there is kind of a trade-off there with doing it this way. This is just a local example of a PUD in Ferndale. This is a phase of Pacific Highlands PUD. So I have the plat map up there against the aerial photo. As you can see, they have a tennis court, a playground, some trails, and the stormwater set aside, and have condensed residential units in this area. And a more recent example is the Molloy Village PUD. The first few phases consisted primarily of just single-family detached units, and the most recent phase included townhomes. So the developer was able to build four and five-unit townhomes with the PUD process. It wouldn't otherwise have been allowed through the traditional zoning, but taking into account the whole process and the PUD application allowed them to use townhomes and cluster them in areas and then preserve critical areas throughout the development. And the final example I'll show you is the Pioneer Plaza site. This was submitted in early 2000s, and it's the only mixed-use commercial PUD I think we've received so far, and it's a pretty big project. It consisted of over 1 million square feet of retail and mixed-use spaces. The project didn't end up going forward. It did have a lot of identified environmental impacts through the environmental impact statement, so there was many road improvements required just for this to work, but it was kind of a makeup project, and then the economy turned. It didn't end up coming through. So now that we're all experts in the PUD, what a PUD is, I'm going to explain the process and then your role in the process. So there's three types of processes in the city that staff reviews projects, and it's administrative, quasi-judicial, and legislative. And I'll focus on the quasi-judicial because that applies to plan unit developments. This review consists of staff review and recommendation. We take in the application, we work with the applicant, go through the codes, have them revise it, and then staff puts together a report and brings it to the hearing examiner for a public hearing. The hearing examiner makes a recommendation to City Council with the whole package, and then City Council makes the final decision. So this process only applies to planned unit developments with traditional subdivisions like I showed you before. Those go to the hearing examiner and basically just stop at the hearing examiner who makes the final decision. So currently, since PUDs are more innovative and flexible, they do still go to City Council for consideration. So at the public hearing, this is a really important part of the planned unit development process. The hearing examiner lets neighbors come up and submit comments based on the project and takes in public testimony, any written comments received during the public comment period, reviews the staff report against the codes and staff's recommendation, and then basically makes his recommendation on the whole package. And in his decision, he cites the staff report, all the written comments, and then that whole package that the hearing examiner puts together is then brought forward to City Council with his recommendation. So that's the official record that gets forwarded to you. Attached to a staff report from city staff. So then when this package gets routed to City Council, the next step is to hold a closed record public meeting. So you hold a meeting at your regular City Council meeting, and you can take in comments from existing parties of record or discuss topics that were established at the original hearing. So if anything new comes up, it's not technically supposed to be considered. But if you guys, if something comes up that maybe didn't come out through the whole process and maybe staff missed it, the hearing examiner, the neighbors, if some big issue comes up during this time frame, City Council can send it back to the hearing examiner to further vet out the specific issue. So two things to consider while you're reviewing PUD proposals: the appearance of fairness. So, you know, you're supposed to look at the project and approve it based on the code and not whether you like it or not, or if you know the person or don't like the person. Pretty straightforward there. And then ex parte communication, that's communication outside of the record, so you shouldn't have, you know, side conversations about the project, and should, I guess, make a decision on it based on what staff brings to you and based on what's in the record. And then some PUDs that are complex, since the code does allow for a certain amount of flexibility, City Council does have the final say and has the ability to say, in extreme cases, it might be too much, you know. So even if the code allows an airport downtown and if it doesn't, you know, work for City Council and it's too much of an impact on the city, you can deny it or remand it back to the hearing examiner to further look into the issue and see if the impacts can be mitigated better. So, yeah, again, the decision is yours to make the final decision. And in the case of Pioneer Plaza, that might have been too big for the city at that time, so it's ultimately up to you guys. The PUD code, we are proposing some changes in the future. I think we brought it to City Council last year. We just haven't quite got to it, but there's some parts of the code that that don't jive together, I guess. We brought it through the process. We want to fix some of the bugs in the code and then maybe look toward more mixed-use guidance, because there's a commercial code and a residential code, and they don't exactly speak that well to each other. But the code does say that you can't have mixed-use development. So it is allowed. It's just not explicitly listed out in the code, so it leaves some room for interpretation. So we want to kind of tighten that up a little bit and then look at more ways to have flexible options and innovative options in the PUD code. So that's all I have. If you guys have questions, I'm happy to answer any. You'll be getting PUD applications soon, like next meeting.
Councilmember Watson.
Yeah.
So if council did reject it, didn't just send it back to the hearing examiner, would the applicant be able to appeal?
Yeah, they can appeal your decision. The city council makes its final decision, and I think they can appeal it to the Superior Court, Whatcom County, right?
Right, and I think that's something to remember. If the council was to reject an application, it's one thing if it was Pioneer Plaza, which is 1 million square feet of retail. It's big. It's another thing if they're proposing 50 residential units, where would we have rejected a traditional subdivision? That becomes much more difficult. So be looking at the magnitude or the additional burden that it might place on the city for your justification for rejecting, because that's going to enable us to defend it.
So it wouldn't go back to the hearing examiner. It would go to court if we rejected it.
If you just outright rejected it, would, but you could remand it back to the hearing examiner. Like if everyone missed like a big part that you feel, wow, this really shouldn't be included in this PUD, it's inappropriate. You guys have, you know, gone outside of the limits of your flexibility. We don't think this part should be here. Send it back for further consideration, and he can look into it and, you know, recommend approval again or, you know, require changes to the application.
Councilmember Greg Hansen.
You said a couple times that a PUD offers the applicant a lot more flexibility. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit more on you know, what do you mean by flexibility? Flexibility in what sorts of things would be different?
You can have smaller lot sizes and reduce setbacks in some cases, and then private infrastructure. You can narrow the streets more. Okay. Our other subdivision code, the traditional subdivision code, has been revised over the years, so that's actually pretty flexible too as far as lot sizes and configuration. So it's almost slowly morphing into the PUD ordinance, but you know, before those changes were made, the PUD ordinance was super flexible. Now it's you can have smaller lot sizes, and there is some trade-offs, but mostly the private infrastructure setbacks. You can go up in building height. You could possibly introduce a new type of use that isn't explicitly listed in the zone. So there's a lot of options that make it more flexible than the traditional subdivision.
So Councilmember Hansen, it's a good time for me to kind of ask the question this way, because we have a lot of visitors today. Mm-hmm. It's basically you have a piece of land that's zoned a certain way. The zoning tells you how many homes you can put on it, the size of lots, the setbacks, the distances from the homes to the property.
Yep.
But a developer might buy it and says, I think I have a better idea, something that will serve the city better, serve us better. It's a PUD, Plan Unit Development. Mm-hmm. They would bring it to us. They have to make a case for it. They have to jump through more. It takes longer. It takes more time, as opposed to just jumping in and building houses on a lot with an existing zoning.
Yeah, and that's
And
right.
I've also seen to notice that we tend to follow the PUDs in our codes. We tend to see a number of PUDs do certain things that start to make sense, and we start to make adjustments to our codes.
That's exactly right.
It's kind of an experiment, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
All set?
That's exactly right.
More questions? Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Glad you're here.
Yeah.
Moving on to our six-year TIP, our Transportation Improvement Program. I bet you that is Mr. Reynolds. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Kevin Reynolds, Public Works Director. Council, tonight, before you, we have the six-year Transportation Improvement Program. We've come to committees on the past two agendas before the Public Works and Utilities Committee and spoke to the six-year TIP. This is an update. We're required by state code to annually update our transportation program so that we are looking ahead for the next six-year period. The six-year TIP that is before you tonight is a minor modification of the previous TIP. We had a consolidation of a couple of projects put together up on Church Road and Thornton intersection, and also have removed projects that we have completed in the intervening time since our last TIP. And I believe that we've had discussion about it. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions if there are questions that council has. We are required to adopt and provide the six-year TIP to the state by the end of June, so we have this meeting and the next meeting. Should there be anything that council would like to change additionally, it does require a public hearing, and a public hearing has been noticed for this meeting. So
before we do that, nobody can read that, and it's a great list. Do you think, in a minute, you could go through the projects that are on our six-year TIP? I think that there are folks here who might like to hear what we're planning to do in the next 6 years.
Okay.
Can you read it?
I can. And so, with this year's version
of the... Whoa. Mr. Rance, hold it. I will read it, if you don't mind.
Oh, you're going to read it. Okay,
well,
sorry.
That's right in front of me here.
Sorry.
Douglas Road. Ferndale Terrace improvements, Lego Avenue, Main Street from Barrett Road to east of CL, help me out.
City Limits.
City Limits, thank you. Mm-hmm. Main and LeBounty Roundabout, a pavement rehabilitation program, Portaway Corridor, including pedestrian and bike improvements, a sidewalk program, signalization upgrades on Main Street, Slater Road Corridor, Thornton, that's from Church to Marine, Thornton, Vista to Molloy, the Thornton Railroad Crossing connected to 2nd Avenue Roundabout, that's the big one at $26 million, Washington and Vista Intersection Improvements, I believe that's a roundabout someday, and I think that's all I have there.
Yeah.
So there's your Christmas list, six-year Christmas list.
Correct.
Questions from the City Council. This is a public hearing, so technical nature. Councilmember Taylor.
How are we going to support Thornton Road, Thornton Overpass Project?
Pardon me?
How are we going to support the Thornton Overpass Project financially?
So,
go ahead.
The city is currently in, has received $19 million worth of money through the Connecting Washington program. We're continuing to work with our design engineers to refine the design of the project and hopefully deliver it within the budgetary constraints that we have. We've been looking to save up and utilize our REIT funds. The Transportation Benefit District has allocated a portion of the funding towards that project, as well as our transportation impact fees. We're pursuing, and I went down this afternoon and went to a funding workshop with the Transportation Improvement Board, and we're going to be actively pursuing a TIB grant application during this funding cycle for getting some TIB funds to go into the Thornton project. And I believe that with a combination of those funding sources that we'll be able to fit the project within the available resources.
More questions of staff? Are you ready for a public hearing? So special instructions for a public hearing, and City Clerk will give us those.
A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you were unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group.
Thank you, City Clerk Duncan. Are there anybody signed up on the sign-up list? Would anyone from the public like to speak to your city council on your six-year transportation improvement plan? Okay, fair enough. We open and close that rather quickly. The public hearing has been closed. Counselor, what is your pleasure? Councilmember Watson.
I do want people to understand that we don't actually have money for most of these projects. It really is our wish list. But this is how staff is going to go out and find grants. And if something's not on here, they can't go get the grants for it. So I don't want any of you to think that just because it's here that it's going to happen in the next 6 months or so. This is just our way of letting us know this is what we need to do, and staff's going to go out and do everything they can to try and find some money to get them done. And I will move to approve the transportation improvement plan.
Second.
It was moved by Councilmember Watson and seconded by Councilmember Czar to adopt the 6-year transportation improvement plan as brought forth by staff and worked through committee. Discussion from council. Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay. And the transportation improvement plan has been adopted. A lot of work on staff's time. I appreciate that very much. Mr. Young.
Excuse me. I just wanted to add a follow-up to the Thornton project. We do have our structural bridge engineering firm scheduled to come to our second meeting in July, so we'll be able to get an update on the design so far. So that might give us a little more information as far as where the design is going to hopefully be meeting our funding.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that warming up the next item? Are you the jail use agreement person? Or the chief?
It looks like he may have been hauled off himself.
No, he's right there.
He's right there.
Arm wrestle for it? Chief Turner, you want to take care of this one?
You're trained to hide. It stands perfectly still.
Mm-hmm. So, Mayor and Council, Chief Turner with the Police Department. We have a renewal request for our jail use agreement. Mentioned in committees that there was some changes in the fees, where the daily fee has gone up and also a construction fee has been added. The contract itself is for 2 years, but the fees themselves could be readjusted by the county yearly if necessary, depending on what they come across through their renovations. The main change, would be that during renovations, the amount of beds that will be available for in-custody people will be drastically reduced, almost to half of current capacity.
Questions of City Council, of Chief Turner, or staff? This is not a public hearing. Council, that's your pleasure tonight.
I'll move to approve the new jail contract.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Hanson. Who got the second this time? It's Councilmember Kate Hanson. Moved by Councilmember Greg Hanson, seconded by Councilmember Kate Hanson. Discussion from council. Seeing none, all in favor of the contract, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed nay, and the contract has been adopted.
Thank you,
Chief, for watching out for our interests there and promoting public safety. Our next item, I believe, is an annexation issue. Mr. Burnett, now you get to talk.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, City Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. We have before you tonight really the first step from Council's perspective, not necessarily from the applicants, in a lengthy process where I think that they will agree that it is a lengthy process. I won't go into that process, but I'm happy to answer any questions about annexations in general. What we have before you tonight is a request for the council to accept the notice of intent to annex the East Slater Urban Growth Area. This is an area that is, as it states, at the southeast part of our urban growth area. It would encompass all of the private property within that urban growth area, as well as the Washington State Department of Transportation interchange there as well. The notice of intent to annex, if accepted by the City Council, would give the property owners in the area the ability to move forward with a petition to annex. The property owners thus far have demonstrated the ability to provide at least 10% of the assessed valuation in support of the notice of annexation. A petition to annex would require 60% of the assessed valuation to move forward. Prior to the council considering a petition to annex, there would be a fiscal analysis of what the city of Ferndale would inherit and what our responsibilities and costs would be. But at this point, you are merely stating to the applicants whether you wish to continue having this conversation on the annexation or whether you wish for them to cease their activity and wait at least 6 months before reapplying. Acceptance of a notice of intent to annex does not in any way suggest that you wish to annex it or that you wish to deny the annexation. Again, it's just simply allowing the process to move forward. Happy to answer any questions. No public hearings required.
Step. We've seen this in our song, step by step. Questions from council? You do need council approval tonight, I believe.
We would.
Council, what are your pleasure? Councilmember Taylor.
Do we have folks in the audience that would like to speak to this regard?
We could, if you want. It's not a public hearing. I'm not sure if it's necessary.
No? Okay.
It's up to council. Councilmember Watts.
I'll move to approve the notice of intent to annex the East Slater area at I-5.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Watts and seconded by Councilmember Saar to approve the notification of the intent to annex. I don't think I said that quite right, but it's item H. Discussion from council. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. And it's been approved.
Thank you, council.
Good luck to the property owners on that. We're getting close to the end. I'm way off on my time. I blew it today, so we're moving rather quickly. We're moving on down to mayor reports, and as you know, started a couple weeks ago, was maybe a new tradition, we'll see how long it goes, to recognize what we are calling humble hometown heroes. These are folks that don't make a lot of noise, who aren't running for anything, aren't in the newspaper very much, nominated sometimes by staff, by the mayor, by council, and I'd like to read tonight's hometown heroes. They're not notified of this. They don't know about it until they get this postcard in the mail. But it says on this date, Monday, June 4th, 2018, Paul Engelsberg and Lucy Morse were recognized for their unceasing commitment to justice, equality, and building a better community. Among many things done, we note Paul's research and scholarship that led to a better understanding and awareness of discrimination against Chinese, Native American, Japanese, and Indian citizens, as well as Lucy's founding an organization, the Ferndale Community Resource Center, and her ongoing efforts to help those less fortunate. We are proud to put their names in the permanent record as true, humble hometown heroes, and I invite City Council, if you wish, to sign a note on here, and we will mail this to them. That is the extent of Mayor's report tonight. Move on to council reports. Anything from the council? Staff reports, plenty.
Nothing.
Public works. Finance?
Nothing.
Our chief? Okay. City administrator? Mr. Sweeney.
Sorry guys.
You were the communications officer. You got to talk.
Thank you to everybody who showed up at Food Truck Fridays last Friday. It was a big success, and we were a bit of a victim of our own success. So for those of you who wanted more food options at Food Truck Friday, on July 6th, you can find Back East Barbecue, the Mobile Mouth Hole, Dazzy Pop Cupcakes, a coffee stand, and a few others at Star Park starting at 5:30. So hope to see you all there. We're going to get some more seating, too. And really, my favorite part of this is I get to say the name of all the, Mobile Mouth Hole. Yeah. It's like a chicken and waffles thing.
Of course it is. Cause
right. It's a mobile mouth hole. Get it in your mouth hole. That's their slogan. We are also holding yoga in the park June 16th in Pioneer Park at 11 a.m. So hope you'll namaste for that event.
We have great graphic, by the way.
You're welcome.
That's really good.
He was showing his downward facing dog. Yes. The Penny Stinkers are going to be performing at our first concert of the year, Music in the Park, also at Pioneer Park, June 30th, starting at 6 o'clock. They're a great kind of bluegrass, classic rock mix, worth checking out. And we'll be joined by the New Mexico Tamale Company. If you like New Mexico tamales, come to the Unity Care groundbreaking, which is happening this Thursday at 4:30 out on Portal Way. We're breaking ground on a brand new healthcare facility, and it's going to be really neat. And, as I mentioned, tamales. Once you're done with that, stampede your way over to the Cedar Creek Park, because that same night at 5:30, we're having a listening session. So if you live near Cedar Creek Park And you all know that Cedar Creek Park is off of Thornton Way and Aquarius. It's a beautiful park. You should check it out. At 5:30, we're having a listening session there with lemonade and cookies, asking the residents what they want to see in the park, because we're looking to see what the next phase of Cedar Creek will look like. So you should check it out. With that, I'm done.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sweeney. Our last staff member, Susan Duncan, our city clerk, has something for us.
Well, this isn't as exciting as all of that stuff, but the AWC allows up to 3 voting delegates from our electeds, and their annual board meeting is scheduled during the annual conference. So it seems pretty convenient to me that we have 3 council members who are attending the conference, and that would be Councilmember Watson, Councilmember Kate Hansen, and Councilmember Czar. So I would suggest, if no one objects, that those would be our 3 voting delegates if they so choose to attend the AWC annual business meeting. And have
if there are no objections, can we have the 3 of you be our delegates?
Sure.
By consent? Mm-hmm. Fair enough. You are our delegates. It means you get to go extra meeting. There you go.
Thank you, Susan, for doing that.
I think that's it. I think that's it for staff reports. We're now going into executive session, and for the public, what that means is very rarely do we get to do things, or we are allowed to do things, not in front of you. Most of the stuff we do is in very transparent before the public, but sometimes we do need to get into private session, that's going to happen tonight. So our city clerk's going to read some special rules, I believe. But I'm going to read the rules. There we go. No, I'll read it. It's right here. It's very short. Here we go. Pursuant to RCW, the Revised Code of Washington, 4230.110, subsection B, in case you're looking it up, we will now enter executive session to discuss the potential acquisition of real estate. The session will last approximately 15 minutes, and action may be taken after the session. So at this time, we're going to put a pause in the meeting and give you a chance to go outside in the sun. If you need to have your stuff signed, students, we'll stay and do that. And then in about 3 minutes, we're going to close all the doors. But in 15 minutes, we will open the doors because we do expect probably to have some council action when we come back. So you're welcome to come back in. It's a nice evening, or you can just go home. So we're going to take a break now for a few minutes. And if you need your stuff signed, we will take care of that.